ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कंठ 1 चैप्टर, where are we now? Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Text 46, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kala karma guna dhino deho yang pancha bhutikaha katamanyangs tu gopayet sarpagrasto yata param. Sanskrit translation from the Sanskrit to the English by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. This gross material body made of five elements is already under the control of eternal time, kala, action, karma, and the modes of material nature, guna. How then can it, being already in the jaws of the serpent, protect others? Just to make that a little easier to understand, what it's talking about, the gross material body, this thing that we call ourselves, it's under the control of material nature. So the point that Srila Prabhupada will expand upon in his purport is that we are not free, we're under control. So here's Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse. The world's movements, this is, just listen to this very carefully, this first sentence, because it's really a radical departure from much that is thought of as being noble and liberating. The world's movements for freedom, you've heard of freedom movements, right? In India we have, well, of course there was the movement headed by Mohandas Gandhi for Swaraja, freedom of India from British political rule. Then there's the Dalits here in India, the oppressed. Dalit literally means crushed or oppressed people. Their freedom. Then, of course, we have the women's freedom movement, and then freedom of Tibet, that's largely forgotten nowadays. Tibet should be free, and there are various movements for freedom. Srila Prabhupada writes, the world's movements for freedom through political, economic, social, and cultural propaganda. These are all very noble causes, right? What does Srila Prabhupada say? They can do no benefit to anyone, for they are controlled by superior power. A conditioned living being is under the full control of material nature, represented by material, by eternal time, and activities under the dictation of different modes of nature. To understand all that Srila Prabhupada's writing here, one has to have a good background in understanding the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. I'll read it again. A conditioned living being is under the full control of material nature, represented by eternal time and activities under the dictation of different modes of nature. There are three material modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance. Unless one is situated in the mode of goodness, one cannot see things as they are. The passionate and the ignorant cannot even see things as they are. Therefore, a person who is passionate and ignorant cannot direct his activities on the right path. Only the man in the quality of goodness can help to a certain extent. Most persons are passionate and ignorant, and therefore their plans and projects can hardly do any good to others. Above the modes of nature is eternal time, which is called kala, because it changes the shape of everything in the material world. Even if we are able to do something temporarily beneficial, time will see that the good project is frustrated in course of time. The only thing possible to be done is to get rid of eternal time, kala, which is compared to Kala Sarpa, or the cobra snake, whose bite is always lethal. In Bengali, the cobra is called Kala Sarpa. In your language, same. No one can be saved from the bite of a cobra. The best remedy for getting out of the clutches of the cobra like Kala or its integrity, the modes of nature, is Bhakti Yoga, as it is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. The highest perfectional project of philanthropic activities is to engage everyone in the act of preaching Bhakti Yoga all over the world, because that alone can save the people from the control of Maya or the material nature as represented by Kala, Karma and Guna as directed above. The Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, chapter 26, confirms this definitely. Just find this out. Hare Krishna. I chose to speak on this verse because in the purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses freedom, and it's a topic that I've spoken on several times. It's a major topic of discussion among intellectuals at the present time, and has been so for at least 100 years. Political freedom, individual freedom, social freedom, freedom from poverty, freedom from oppression. It's a major topic in the material sphere. And in a somewhat different way, it's a major topic in the Hare Krishna, in the spiritual sphere, especially in what is called the Indic religions. That means what people call Hinduism, Buddhism, Sikhism, and so on. The topic of moksha or mukti, it's a major topic. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna's what is called the Charam Upadesh is Sarvadharma. Charam Upadesh means the topmost or the ultimate instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is Sarvadharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tva Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishami Masucha. So the term moksha comes in this verse. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of religion and fully take shelter in me, surrender to me. I will deliver you, I will release you, moksha, moksha yashami. I will cause you to be free from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So this is the concept of moksha or mukti. These terms have become known even in Western languages. These terms have entered. Synonyms, moksha, mukti, freedom. The idea is to be free from birth and death. And in this verse, which I just quoted, Lord Krishna talks about becoming free from sinful reactions by surrendering to him. And the term mukta, mukti, moksha, they come again and again in Bhagavad Gita. So it is a major topic. I thought about speaking on this again. Some thoughts came to my mind. Seeing the dog here locked up, bored and caged up. And I just thought, well, starting to think, there's so many impetuses for thinking, that here in India, dogs don't have the royal status that they have in the Western countries, where in many states in America, it's actually illegal to have a dog unless you're there at home to look after them, because they have to have some company and they'll feel lonely. Poor dog. Here in India, dogs don't have the same status, and there must be millions of dogs in this country. the vast majority of them are street dogs. They run around the streets in towns and villages and get stones thrown at them, and they get some food here and there, and they usually run around at night barking and making a disturbance and feeling they're very big when there's no one there to throw any stones at them. So which is better off? The bored, caged up dog who can't go anywhere but at least gets his food, or the street dog who has his freedom? That's the point I'm talking about, all right? Freedom. Being caged up means you don't have any freedom. The freedom to run around and then get stones thrown at you, and you don't know where your food's going to come from. Which is better off? There could be a third version. You could be a dog in China, and then you'll end up in someone's dog soup. That's another alternative. I haven't been to China, but you probably won't find dogs running around the streets like you do in India, Bangladesh, Thailand. I didn't say in Pakistan, actually, because that's a Muslim country. They don't like dogs, Muslims. Some good things about Islam. They don't have dogs running around the streets. Where else? What other countries in this area I've been to? Burma, I can't remember. Yeah, they must have dogs running around the streets. So you won't get that in China, because if there's a dog running around the street, he'll summarily be captured and made into dog soup or something like that, maybe dog chops or whatever. So which is better? If we interviewed the dog and said, hello there, Butch, you tell us now, what would you like, to be free, or and then you have no fixed place of residence and no fixed food, skinny, have stones thrown at you, or be cooped up and nowhere to go? Well, it's difficult to say. I'm definitely not an expert on dog psychology or dog rights, animal rights. And the dog himself might not know also. One thing is that we may say, if we let the dog run around free, then he'd be free. But how free is he? He's condemned in that body to act and think like a dog. He can't think that anything else that I am a dog.
So there he is, the poor dog. He's caged up, can't move around, no freedom. Well, that is you and me and every other living being in this world. We've all been in situations like this in previous lives, many, many times, and situations much, much worse. And what's more, we're still in the same situation. The idea that we have freedom, it's just an illusion. We are tied up in this material world.
In the same way people think we want to be free, we want to have our freedom of expression. I don't want to be controlled by anyone, but we're all control. One major point of control or factor of control is we're in a certain kind of body. You say, I want to be free, I don't want to be anyone's. Well, we're controlled by the fact that we have to eat. We can't say, I want to be free from the need to eat. We may think, well, I'm free to eat whatever I like. But that also, if we're in a situation where there's no food, then we're not free to eat anything we like, and we'd be happy to have anything, any kind of food, when we're starving. Or we may say, well, I like to eat whatever I like, but then you have to have enough money to be able to afford to eat what you like. And you may like to eat it, but how much can you eat? We're conditioned in so many ways. We're not. If we say, I like to eat meat, I like to eat dog's meat, well, how much can you eat? Can you eat a whole dog? Maybe a chihuahua at the most. You know, a chihuahua, a little dog about this big. They breed them in the Western. And then you get the Dobermans, huge thing. What's the biggest breed of dog? Dobermans, St. Bernards? I don't know. They're big, big, huge dogs. But we're conditioned. You may say, Mate, I want to be free to do what I like. We can't fly in the sky like these insects of dragonflies. They're flying all around here. We're not free to fly like that. Mesa, I like to be free to go wherever I like. Well, with an Indian passport, it's not so easy, is it? even if you have the money to go here and there, you still have to get a visa for almost every country. What countries can you go to on an Indian passport without a visa? Just a few. Nepal, Singapore, Malaysia maybe, I don't know. Not many countries. But then even if you go there, there's still so many laws of the land that we have to follow. Here in India, the law of the land is that you have to drive on the left side. If you say, well, I want to drive on the right side, then you'll end up either arrested by the police or in an ambulance for getting in a crash. So we are bound by various laws. The dog is in the body of a dog, and he has no choice but to think and act like a dog. Prakriti kriyamarnani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyate. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that every living being is under the influence of the three modes of nature and thinks that he's free to act in a way that he likes, but he's not free at all. He thinks, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But it's all being, our desires are enacted through material nature to some extent, but to a large extent, we are controlled. And the dog, he can't think about, well, should I bark or not bark? He's just like that. He's forced to act and think like a dog. So we also, we're in a human body and we have many similar desires. We have desires for food, for shelter, for companionship, for love, for sex. In human life we have more choice, maybe. How much choice do we have? If we're born in, for instance, a tribal society with no contact with the outside world, and there are still some tribal societies like that, then we really don't have much choice of how we act or think. Even the idea of choice, the very concept of choice, might not enter our consciousness at all. Still, should the dog be let free? Well, when I asked your good self about that, you said, but better the dog's not let free because he bites. He's trained to be a watchdog. He's let to, when there's no one here, which is most of the time there's no one here, he's trained to run around here and there. And he bites. He's a cross between an Alsatian, known in American English as a German shepherd dog, which is pretty ferocious, and then a Doberman Pinscher, which is highly ferocious dog. And there's one other breed of, which is even more, I can't remember, you remember the name? Even Rottweiler, yeah, they're really dangerous dogs. And even they can turn on their masters and just kill them. They're really dangerous dogs. You wouldn't get that from a Labrador or a Spaniel. They're a different breed. So different breeds have different outlooks. And it's best the dog, if a dog is going to bite everyone who comes around, better the dog's locked up. What about that? You say people should have freedom. Well, there are prisons also. One in America, there's a prison I visited three times now. What do they call it? A reformation center or something like that. Something like, just the word I can't remember now. Reformation center. Something like that. So the idea is that the people in there, they're supposed to be trained to be good citizens. But another major reason is that people are dangerous. They should be locked up and away from regular. They shouldn't be given freedom. A few years ago, it came up in California, parole for Charles Manson. who was a cult killer, murderer, and there was public outcry that keep this man locked up, even though he's old, he should be locked up. We don't want him outside. He shouldn't be given freedom. These are the same people who believe in the freedom of the individual, but they don't want it for him because he's a dangerous, dangerous man. So these are various ethical, philosophical questions which arise about freedom. Of course, we're talking about dogs, but then it applies to humans also, and maybe other animals also. How ethical is it to keep chimpanzees in cages and perform experiments on them? Well, that's good for humans, isn't it? Because then we can make medicines by experimenting on chimpanzees. There's some idea like that. So all these kind of ethical questions arise. Staying at that farm near Salem in Tamil Nadu, where they keep the cows tied up all the time. So we just let them go once, and they weren't protesting about not being let go, but when they were let go, then they appeared to be very happy. And when cows feel happy, they jump on their hind legs, so they had a little freedom of movement. Otherwise, they're just kept as machines for giving milk, and milk turns into money. How much freedom do the animals have? What about the chickens in the battery farms? They don't have any freedom. They're just all their life, they're kept in a tiny space, and they lay eggs and then they kill them, and that's their whole life. No freedom for them. So humans, they want freedom, but at the same time they're imposing on other living beings non-freedom. And so some people, they feel it's better if they eat free-range eggs. That means eggs from chickens who are allowed to run around here and there before they're killed. So it's more ethical to have chickens run around freely and then kill them, rather than keep them in a tiny confined space and then kill them. It's more humane to do so. So these are various philosophical questions that arise. Why should we want freedom? What's all this about freedom? If you get food and a place to live, which you're sheltered from the heat and the cold and the rain, why should you want freedom? Why? Srila Prabhupada himself said that he was talking about this, and he said that he gave the anecdote in his own life how returning to Bombay from Kenya, he was put in quarantine for 2 weeks because he didn't have a yellow fever injection. And it was just like being in prison. Of course, he wasn't treated like a criminal, but he wasn't allowed to go anywhere. And he said that even though I had the freedom to move around inside, but the very fact that I was not allowed to go outside, Prabhupada said, I felt very uncomfortable. And he gave the example of flying in a plane. After some time, you feel very uncomfortable. After a few hours, if you're on a longer flight, you feel very uncomfortable. It seems a natural instinct is to want to be free. So then it might seem that the dog who's allowed to be free is better off, even if he doesn't have fixed food and place to stay, might seem to be better off than the dog who's confined. Well, what's the ideal for a dog? The ideal for a dog is to, maybe the Western model I was talking about, where they're treated like royalty, that the dogs, they're treated as if they're really very, very important, and people really have a very high opinion of dogs. They like to have a good master. And that is the ideal of the Vaishnava, to recognize that we need to have a good master. Our master is Krishna. He can look after us. Whoops! What happened there? Is it still everything okay? Okay. A devotee wants to be like a dog, and in this regard, I'm going to read the song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in which he envisions himself as a dog of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada often quoted this with the idea of being a dog of a Vaishnava. So this is the song. It's a very beautiful song in Bengali. I'll read it verse by verse and give the translation. Sarvasha tomar charne shopia parechi tomar ghare tumi tu thakur tomar kukur bolia janoha more. Now that I have surrendered all that I possess unto your lotus feet, I throw myself down before your house. You are the master of the house. Kindly consider me your own dog. So it's just like a puppy dog may come to a house and wag his tail and say, take me in, let me be your dog. Let me be your dog. So the next verse, Bandi en nikote amare palibe rohibo toma dare. Protipa janare ashite nadibo rakibo gore pare. So he says, you will bind me up close to the house. In Indian culture, the dog is not brought inside the house, but maybe just tied up close by. But Bhaktivinoda is saying, yes, tie me up. Not freedom. Tie me up. And then you'll maintain me. I'll be there at your door. I'll stay there. And anyone, so it's like a watchdog, any pratipa janeri, people who are your enemies or people coming with a wrong motive, I won't allow them to come. I'll keep them on the outer side of the moat, because in Bengali villages it seems it was a common thing. I haven't seen it, I don't remember seeing it, that there'll be a moat around the house. Moat, do you know what that is? It's a ditch surrounding a house or surrounding a whole city with water in. And the idea is to keep out unwanted people or living entities. Tavanijajan prashada shibya uchishta rakibe jaha amara bhojan paramanande pratidin hobe taha. So whatever food, prasad, that your devotees leave behind, they'll throw me some leftovers. And I'll be very happy to take that. That will be my daily food, Bhaktivinoda says. Boshiya shuya tomara charan chintibo shatata ami nachite nachite nikote jaibo jokona dakibe tumi. Either sitting down or lying down, I will always think of your lotus feet. And whenever you call me, I will come to you. Nachite, nachite. Dancing and dancing, I will come to you. Nijera poshan kobu na babibo. Rohibo bhavera bhari. Bhakati vino tomare paloka. Boliya borona kore. I will never think of my own nourishment. I'll just remain absorbed in love of you. Bhaktivinoda accepts you as his only maintainer. So this is a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where from his love-filled heart he expresses his desire to be a dog of Krishna. So the whole idea of being free, totally free, for a start it's impossible, we're under the control of the material nature. And another thing is, our constitutional position is to be a servant of Krishna. But a servant in the sense not like someone who's a slave and whipped into submission, but very happily serving Krishna. In other words, a devotee doesn't aspire to be totally free. A devotee aspires to be bound up by love, as Krishna himself ties up his devotees with love. Pranaya Rasanaya. In Bhagavatam, it's described how Krishna ties up his devotees with the rope of love. And he himself, although he's the most free because he's the most powerful, he likes to be loved by his devotees, which means he becomes obliged to them, which means he's not free. Yet, the idea of being free is connected with the idea of having the power to do what you want. Just like the Dalits in India may say, we don't have the power to do what we want. We're restricted by social restrictions. We don't have the power to come up and do as we like. But then everyone is restricted. Only Krishna can do what he wants to the fullest extent. He can become a fish if he wants. Here in this area, we're fish avatar area. Matsya avatar. He can become a fish. He can become a hog. He can become it's Matsya kurma first. He can become a tortoise. He can become a hog. He can become a half man, half lion. He can become a dwarf. He can become a belligerent massacrer, as Parashuram. He can become an ideal king. He can really be whatever he likes. But at the same time, so he's the only one with full freedom to do that, but at the same time, he likes to be bound by the love of his devotees. So the whole idea of wanting to be fully free in among humans, that's an impossible aspiration. We're limited in so many ways. And it's part of the diseased mentality of wanting to be God. It's not possible. We can never attain that situation, and therefore we're always frustrated as long as we're desiring to be totally free. Now, as I was saying, the whole spiritual endeavor in the Indic religions, as they're called, is to be free from Maya, free in a different way. But then Vaishnavas, our especially Gaudiya Vaishnavas, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we don't even aspire for that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mama Janmani Janmani Ishvare Bhavatat Bhakti Rahaitu Gitwai. He says, Na Dhanam Na Janam Na Sundarim Kavitam Va Jagadisha Kamae. I want to be free from the foolish desire to be very wealthy, to be very popular, to be very powerful, to be very attractive to women. All these foolish desires, I don't aspire to fulfill them, and I don't aspire even to be free from birth and death. I aspire to be your servant. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us how to pray to Krishna, what to aspire for. So this whole idea of freedom, the America, the United States of America, was the whole country was founded on the idea of freedom, that the Pilgrim Fathers set off from England with the idea, we'll have freedom to practice our religion. And they had the Statue of Liberty in New York City. Of course, when they reached America, they didn't care much about the freedom of the residents who were already there, the Red Indians, because their freedom, their rights, that wasn't part of the equation. And later on, they imported so many Negroes from Africa, and they presumed that freedom is for whites, not for Africans. And so they made slaves of them, and then later they released them, and freedom for the slaves. But so the idea of freedom America was founded on that, but in retrospect, in a somewhat hypocritical way. But the whole idea of freedom then, how practical is it? The more freedom we have, the less security we have. If we say, okay, we're going to be free, okay, no laws. Why should there be any laws? Laws restrict our freedom. So then you have freedom to kill others, and others have the freedom to kill you. So if we say there's, just like in many countries in the world, you don't have the freedom to carry a gun with you. Or even in the United States of America, where it's legal to do so, I believe in every state, but still you have to get a license. You're not completely free, and there are age limits on that. But it is quite plausibly argued that the freedom to own a gun also adds to the insecurity of the rest of the population, and definitely the deaths by murder by gun is much higher in America than probably anywhere else in the world per capita, definitely than in the United Kingdom, where I was born, where carrying a gun is just not allowed. Even for the police, they hardly carry guns. Now they started, some of them, not much. So more freedom means less security. Okay, I should have the freedom to carry a gun to protect me against others, but then what about protecting others from you? So this whole idea, I should be free, but we're all part of a society. My freedom may impinge upon your freedom. After the 9/11 destruction of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, plus another building close by, then there were so many strictures on freedom in America. That you can get searched anywhere in the airports, there's so much strict security. And people accepted these strictures on their freedom with the idea, now you'll be more protected. To give everyone the freedom just to go on a plane without getting searched is very dangerous. So people accept. You don't hear any protest that you have to line up to get searched, every inch of your body is searched, everything you carry on the plane, everything you check in, it's all searched. So that constrains your freedom and takes about so much of your time, because you have to go to the airport early so you can get searched in time. It takes time. So people accept that. Largely the people accept that because they feel, yeah, we need to sacrifice our freedom for our own security. Now, Srila Prabhupada often spoke about this. He wasn't an advocate of mass freedom. And actually in the Vedic culture, it's not that everyone has the same level of freedom. For Shudras, and by Shudras we mean people of low consciousness, not necessarily people born in a low family, but people of low consciousness, means if they have freedom, then they'll drink and take intoxication and fight and have sex left, right and center. It's not good for them to have so much freedom. Better that they are controlled. That is the understanding. And practically we see at the present time there's so much freedom for people to do what they like, and especially in the Western countries. But at the same time, it's very dangerous to walk around, especially at night, in the big cities, in many of the big cities in the Western world. I remember this is a few years ago, coming in from somewhere, I think, somewhere else in Europe, coming into London in England, and we arrived in the evening and we got into central London about 11 o'clock at night, and it was a dangerous feeling. There were so many people wandering around, intoxicated and shouting at the top of their voices. We have our temple in central London, and especially on, because of course we get up early, 4 o'clock latest for Mangalarti. And then we hear people screaming and bottles being broken. And if you go out at that time early in the morning, you'll find people still wandering around drunk and shouting. And one morning I went out after Mangalarti, that would be shortly after 5 o'clock in the morning, and there's all broken bottles on the road. Drunken people had broken the bottles, and there was blood. And obviously, they used the broken bottle to slash someone's face or whatever. So is it good to give people freedom if their idea of freedom, their idea of having a good time is to go out, get drunk, get in a fight? Is that good? Or is it better that they be controlled? For their own good and for that of others. They could kill themselves. They could kill others. There's certainly nothing to be benefited by getting drunk. So in the Vedic understanding, there should be some control. It's understood that people of low consciousness, they will get drunk, but then that can be limited. And within the Vedic culture, there's allowance for that, but religiously. Religiously, you can get drunk on certain times. You can have a festival to some lower class people. They'll worship some local goddess, and they'll offer wine and drink it on a festival day, and they'll all get drunk. And often on the festival days, they also allow free sex and everything. But that's not for the higher class people. Higher class people, they have more freedom. They're not so controlled because it's understood that they will not misuse that. And in Brahmin society, if a Brahmin even once got drunk, he was out, thrown out. All his privileges lost. No allowance to get drunk even once. It's supposed to be a very high character. And that means also not exploiting others. Brahmins, they're not subject to the law in Vedic culture, but on the other hand, they don't break the law. They're not supposed to exploit others. They don't get rich, but they live their life giving spiritual knowledge to others, or even material knowledge. So seeing the dog reminds us of our position. We're looking at the dog. It's something like looking in a mirror. We've all been dogs. We've all been dogs and cats and chimpanzees and giraffes and coconut trees. How about that? If you get in the body of a tree, how much freedom do you have? Freedom is severely curtailed. You can hardly think at all. No freedom to move. Even by the arrangement of Krishna's material nature, the coconut tree does such a good service by giving this very nourishing and pleasing and sattvic food, the coconut, which is absolutely intrinsic to life in Kerala, right? Coconuts in Kerala is absolutely intrinsic to the whole food culture. And anad bhavanti bhutani, everyone lives on food. Food and then used for so many things, coconuts. For the oil is used for massage and for burning in the lamps, and then you can make ropes out of it and out of the coir, the coconut covering, and then you can make beds out of it and so many things. The coconut is Krishna's offering to the human beings But the living being who's in that body has very little freedom, much less even that of a dog. So seeing a dog caged up, that just reminds us that's our position. We think we have some freedom, but we're impelled by material nature to go from one body to another. Unless we understand that we are bound up in material life, going from body to body to body because of misuse of our freedom. It is important to have freedom. Why do we desire freedom? Because naturally we're not meant to be forced to go from body to body to body. So it's natural to want to have freedom, to be not constricted into a position which is not natural to us. We could say the dog, it's not natural for him to be confined within a cage, but then it's not natural for us to be confined within a cycle of birth and death. So it is important to have freedom. We have an aspiration to have freedom, but not completely. We can't completely have freedom. And if we do to have complete freedom, then to do whatever we like, then where would be the love? How could we love others? Then there'd be no one on our level. Then we'd be God. It's not possible. And then even God himself, he has all freedom to do what he likes, but he chooses to be a cowherd boy and to act as an ordinary person. Because better than freedom is interaction with others, which means serving them, considering their needs as more important than our own. Living with others means we just can't act completely selfishly unless we're a child. And we're supposed to, a child only knows what I want. But the more developed a person is in consciousness, the less he thinks of what he wants, and he thinks of how I can serve others. That service is sent to be centered on Krishna. But to want to serve others, that means to lose our freedom, the freedom to do what we want, and rather to act in a way that is beneficial to others. Now, Srila Prabhupada opened this purport by saying all these movements for freedom, for social emancipation, political emancipation, they can't actually help us because people are trying to get freedom in the wrong way. Yeah, just like the people of India got freedom from the British, but instead of being exploited by the Manchester mill owners, they got exploited by the Ahmedabad mill owners. So they had the freedom to be exploited by Indians instead of being exploited by Englishmen. So it doesn't help. And it also doesn't help that the mill owners themselves, the big rich men, they also have to die. I was just yesterday looking at the 1992 GBC resolutions, and it's interesting in this sense that I was reading about, well, Suhotra Swami this and Swarup Damodar Swami that, and at the time it seems to be such an important thing, and because it's in relation to Krishna it is important, but they're both gone from our material vision. Suhotra Swami, Swarup Damodar Swami, whatever the issues may have seemed to be very important at the time, now they're gone. And whatever else we're doing, it may seem to be a very important thing. What I'm doing, what is the condition of my stomach, what is the, what are other people saying about me, this, that, but then we die. And then where do we go? That's the really important thing we should be focused on. We have the freedom in human life to consider philosophically, to try to understand why are we here. But if we misuse that freedom in petty things, then we just go back to the cycle of birth and death. Whatever we're doing, it may seem to be very important now. It's just like waves in the river. Big people of the world. Who are the big people in the world today? Donald Trump, Narendra Modi, Vladimir Putin. Who else? Theresa May, Angela Merkel. Their names are in the papers. After a few days, it won't be. They'll die, they'll be forgotten. There was one Prime Minister of India, Chandrasekhar. How long was he a Prime Minister for? 1.5 years, something. Who's heard of his name? Young people nowadays, have they heard of his name? Deve Gowda. You heard of his name. At least you heard of his name. He was also Prime Minister, I think twice, but just for a short time. It's a big position. Prime Minister of the most populous democracy in the world. Forgotten. He's still alive, I think, this Deve Gowda. Must be over 90 years old now. How are we using our life? We're so much concerned to be big, or we think whatever we're doing is so important, but our freedom should be used to understand who we are. This is the proper use of our freedom. If we don't know how to properly use our freedom, then we remain tied up. We can't see how we're tied up. We're tied up in this material world by the desire to enjoy it. Maitunya Agara, that phrase is used. What is the binding force in material life? Is the sexual desire ties us up. All kinds of desires, but especially sexual desire, ties us in this material world. Freedom from that is real freedom. So we have the choice. We have this much choice, this much freedom. We can choose to be controlled by Krishna. We can surrender to Krishna and say to him, Sarva Shatoma, Charane Shopya, I've offered everything I have, everything I consider mine to you. We can offer ourselves to Krishna, or we can maintain a false sense of freedom while being controlled by Maya. That's freedom that we have. And of course we have to make decisions all the time. All the time we have to make decisions. What are we doing with our life? We may make various plans, just like you're planning to make this house into a Ayurvedic and resort with Kalari, what's it called? Kalari. The indigenous martial arts system. So you chose to do that. You didn't have to do that. And it should work out, but you never know. It's not a major risk. But you never know what will happen. The bigger you are, the more freedom you have. Is that true? Not necessarily. Just like Narendra Modi, he can go here and there, but in another way he's restricted in so many ways by his security arrangement. They won't let him do so many things because they have to protect him from the threat of assassination. So if you're rich, you may think you're more secure. You can have a big house with locks on the doors and a dog to protect, but you're in a more dangerous position. No one kidnaps the daughters of poor men for ransom. But the children of rich men can be kidnapped any time. They're in a more dangerous position. So how much freedom do you have? The Ambanis, they have the freedom to fly around here and there, but they need to be protected all the time. So what's the conclusion? There's no real freedom in this material world. And the political history of the world in the last 100 years of various nations, especially in the Western countries where they promote this idea of freedom, is an ongoing struggle between the people, as Karl Marx called them, the people, and the authorities, and those who are in charge. And there's always a struggle between the establishment and the ordinary people, and it just goes on and on and on. Sometimes it swings more this way, sometimes it swings more that way. In India, prior to the idea of democracy, there was the idea, there's a king. He's in charge. And that idea is still strong in China and Russia, where the people are not so agitated that they don't have so much supposed freedom of democracy. They're used to the idea that we need a powerful leader. So what's the conclusion of all of this? Be free. Be free to be who you are. Then we have to understand who we are, how we can really be satisfied. And that is by submitting ourselves to not be free, to be servants of Krishna, which means that we become free from the pressure that Maya exerts on us to try to enjoy our senses. So that is our freedom, to happily submit ourselves to Krishna and be his servant and be in a loving relationship with Krishna. This excessive emphasis on freedom is actually a social disaster. People say you should be free, enjoy yourself to the fullest extent. But just like, for instance, when a man and a woman get married, then it is a contract to be less free. The man has to act for the benefit of the wife, and the wife has to act for the benefit of the husband. And if at any point along the time they say, oh, I don't like this, being tied up by this, I want to be free, I want to go away, then there's divorce. And that we're seeing all over the world, so much divorce, because people think, I don't like it. They already got 2-3 kids, and they're not thinking about the children, whether they like it, or what is my responsibility. So much emphasis on freedom, and not enough on responsibility. So we have the freedom to choose to serve Krishna, or to be independent of Krishna. Human life is very responsible. The dog has no responsibility. If the dog bites someone, he might be locked up, or he might be, if the dog regularly does it. In the West, if a dog bites someone, they'll shoot him or put him down. But generally, if a dog just barks, no one, it's understood. It's just a dog, that's all. The dog acts like that. If a human being harasses everyone who comes past his door and starts shouting at them, in other words, acts like a dog does, anyone comes past the door, the dog starts barking. If a human does, anyone who comes past, they start abusing them, then he may be arrested for misbehavior. Because we have a responsibility to act in a way that is suitable for a human being. So there's freedom, duties, responsibility. It's not such a simple thing when we talk about freedom. Let the people be free. Maybe not, or to a limited extent. All these questions, all these ethical questions, we have to see in light of what is the actual purpose of life? Who are we actually? What is our ultimate benefit? People talk about Marxism, capitalism, different kinds of political systems. But they are all based on the idea that we are here to enjoy this world. It's a total misconception from the very beginning. How much freedom should we have? Don't give freedom to the masses. They don't know how to use it. We need strong governments who can plan the course of society, because the common people, they can't understand the complexities. but that means restricting the freedom. That means there's an elite at the top who dictate how society should be. Seems to make sense, but then you get an exploitive elite and all these questions. It all becomes very, very complex and very difficult. And then you swing between leftist government and right-wing government and swing back and forward. We should understand that human life is meant for God realization. Human life should be lived in such a way that we become free from the dictates of lust, greed, and anger. That is possible in the service of Krishna. Hare Krishna.